Welcome to Shift to Tomorrow. Now is the moment leaders throughout distribution must lift our eyes, look towards the horizon, and shift our lens from merely making it through this unprecedented uncertainty to coming out stronger on the other side. This is your moment. Are you ready? You can create your future. You own your tomorrow. And your journey of shifting to tomorrow begins now with your host, Dirk Beveridge.
Welcome to episode 8 of Shift to Tomorrow. I am Dirk Beveridge, your founder and your host for these series of conversations that I'm having to help us all think about how do we as leaders lead our organizations to truly come out of this pandemic stronger than we went in. I believe down to my core, this is not a platitude. I believe we all can, should, and must focus on figuring out how to do exactly that. And today's episode is with a wicked smart, amazing leader in distribution by the name of Joe Neddemeyer, who's the president and CEO of Valen Corporation. And I got to tell you, whenever I need to step back and think and have conversation about what's going on, what are the dots we need to be collecting, I always pick up the phone and call Joe Neddemeyer. And that's basically what you're going to hear here in today's episode, is one of those conversations when Joe joined us back on Mother's Day. Joe Neddemeyer just has this unique ability, first this desire and this discipline to lead the organization to accomplish great things, but then this discipline to be a voracious learner. And he is constantly absorbing information, but he does it strategically. And so I asked Joe on this call, this episode you're going to hear, this conversation, to share with us how he cultivates information to formulate strategy, because I don't think enough of us do that intentionally enough. And so what Joe's going to talk about is how an organization transforms itself from being reactive to being predictive to the marketplace. And in this conversation, Joe's going to talk about the need and how he builds what he calls an intelligence network. Now, he does this towards the end of the conversation, so make sure you get there. But think about those words, building an intelligence network. And he describes what his intelligence network consists of and then shares some of the key trends that he and his leadership have pulled out of that intelligence network to formulate his agile strategy as we're shifting to tomorrow during this pandemic. So let's jump in with Joe Neddemeyer. You're going to gain a lot from Joe here. And here we go. Enjoy. Joe, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, Dirk. How are you?
I am great. Thank you. And I know you're treating Jane very well on this Mother's Day.
Well, you know, I decided I would do this from our office in Chandler, Arizona, and she drove down here with me, and she's in the other room chatting with her mother right now. So, you know, I got to give her a lot of credit for her support through all this. And she's been an excellent mother, and she's now an outstanding grandmother. So I want to just recognize her. And I think the other thing I'd like to say about Mother's Day is I would like to mention that both my grandmother and my mother told me that fear was not an option. Yeah. And I think that's really appropriate today, because they faced a lot of adversity in their careers. The Great Depression, their husband, my grandmother's generation, their husbands went to World War I. My mother's generations, their husbands went off to World War II. They lived through the Great Depression. They saw a lot of adversity, and they just always told us fear is not an option.
Boy, I love it. Great thinking to hold on to today. And Joe, 30 minutes is going to go by so fast, but since you mentioned your mother, let everybody know about how late your mother, you know, continued to go into the office and the like and work. Just real quick, and then we'll dive into everything if you don't mind.
Well, my mother, unfortunately, at the accident, at the age of 84, fell down her basement steps, and the injuries were such that she had to have multiple surgeries, and she eventually passed away from it. But the day before she fell down the steps, she was working.
Yeah.
And for years I had told her, she was worked 3 or 4 days a week, and I was always tell her, "Mom, you're financially secure enough. You never have to do that.
Right.
My brother and I can help you if you need anything. You should enjoy life." And she goes, "I'm not going to sit around here and wait to die."
Yeah.
She goes, "I got to get up and have a purpose. There's got to be a meaning to my life, and I got to make a difference." And that's who she was. And she instilled that in her children, and she lived long enough that her grandchildren got a good taste of that too. So mom never cut a day a minute short. It's the only way I can say it. If she didn't have something to do, she was going to get there fast.
And Joe, I know that's a transition to you as well. It's never cut a day short. So Joe, I appreciate that. And I have over the years loved the conversations, learning about your mother. So I'm really glad that we're talking here on Mother's Day. Joe, when I think of strategic foresight, when I think of a leader's ability to take in and process all this information that is coming at us, and then to cut through the fog and to create clarity and strategic action as a result of that. And I mean this 100%. I think of Joe Neddemeyer. Having watched you over the years, your ability to drive that foresight and that strategic thinking to make strategic decisions for a company, I've just learned from you so much over the years. So let's get into that strategic foresight, if you don't mind. When you saw my premise this week about the need for strategic foresight, ready? Here goes a consultant term, is greater than ever before, right? When you see that premise, what comes to your mind? Do you agree with it, disagree with it? But overall, what comes to your mind?
One of the benefits of my career is I worked at Emerson Electric for 21 years, and planning was everything.
Yep.
In planning, we were trying to set the parameters of how we would operate the business. And within those parameters, we had to have well-detailed plans of how we would advance the business. And it helped you develop certain disciplines. And when I look at what's happening now, we are pretty much capable of dealing with it because through our planning process, we've anticipated up and down and what actions we would take. So I think a lot of what goes into strategic planning is bringing tight focus on the what ifs. What are you going to do if this happens? What are you going to do if this happens? And it's a learning exercise for your management team. And you have to teach them on how to have the sources. And the first rule I tell all of them is stop listening to the chatter in class.
What do you mean by that?
Stop. Nightly news and the politicians, they're just looking for their 15 minutes of fame. They're going to throw out tidbits of information. You have to dig out the facts. You have to be the person that is determining what's important and what's not. You can't be reactionary. You got to be moving ahead of the, it's much like Rick had described. Gretzky's knowledge of the game was he knew where the puck was going to go.
Yeah.
And so, he anticipated, and you have to become an anticipatory organization.
So I love that thinking, stop listening to the chattering class. I think we can all hang on to that. And so, Joe, rather than the chattering class, for us to be Wayne Gretzky and know where the puck is going to go, you talked about a tight focus on the what ifs. I don't even think you all, you know, saw a pandemic coming, right? But now we're in a situation where we have to think about the what ifs on the other side of this, a pandemic. So how are you helping the leaders throughout Valen, and how do you yourself, you know, what are the processes you guys are going through right now to start driving clarity of this new abnormal?
Well, yeah, the first thing we had to do was deal with the unexpected.
Yep.
On March 16th, Northern California, the Bay Area, announced we would do a shelter in place.
Yep.
Well, they did that without a whole lot of guidelines. But we had to tell people to go home, take their computers, and operate. Good news for us is we have made a significant digital investment.
You bet.
And that was pretty seamless. I was talking to a supplier last week, and he told me he had to go out and buy laptops so people could go home and work from home. And that troubled me.
Yep.
Because you can draw your own implications from that, but it troubled me. But we were ready and able and capable because we've been steadily making this investment in digital conversion. Well, you know, that was Monday. On Tuesday, we were trying to figure out what the rules were, and they were coming out garbled and confused. But we put a team focused on what are the rules, because they changed from state to municipality to county. They seem to be competing with each other. And that team has been monitoring that ever since. On Wednesday, we had an earthquake in Salt Lake City, and I suddenly had part of our team in Croatia there. We had to cope with that and help them through that. On Thursday, the whole state shut down, and that was just week one. So the first 2 weeks were pretty reactionary.
Yeah.
But at the end of the second week, I gave the management team guidance that I wanted them to put together a plan that what did we have to do if our business was down 20%, 30%, and 50%.
Okay.
And the team worked on that, and we have a plan in place now that we know what we're going to do with those three different levels of slipping performance, so to speak. So I'm quite confident we know what to do. The good news for us is our business, because we're tech oriented and we also have a large presence in medical equipment, is holding in there pretty well. And as a part of that process, what we wanted to do is give our employees certainty in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you can talk about grand things and grand strategies, but it all boils down to, what does this mean to me? And we instituted biweekly state of the business broadcasts. I just did one yesterday, and I'll tell you what the three topics were. The topics were, what's our performance in April and year to date, which is solid. The other one was, we have to speed up our digital transformation. We have to become an omni-channel marketing company and sales company. And the third one was, this is our return to work protocol, because we're going to have people begin returning to work in our offices in Arizona and Texas this week. And we've got it in stepped things. We're not having everybody come back at once. We're identifying who our senior workers are, which includes me. We're phasing them in later because we want to see what happens. We don't want to put people at risk. We've instituted new policies and procedures that we call confidence cleaning, and I think that's going to become a new phrase of the future. People have to have the confidence that you're keeping the place clean and maintaining standards.
Yeah.
So that was very well detailed and laid out. The only challenge we have with that is every time we think we have something done at 9 o'clock in the morning in some location, the rules change by 2. So we have to have the ability to adapt and improvise, but our team has just embraced that and they're doing an excellent job with it.
I love it. I love it. Joe, you've said it a number of times, and I'm going to be doing a lot of thinking on this. I've got a 24-hour drive in front of me starting tomorrow at 3 a.m. So I'm going to be doing a lot of thinking about this as I'm driving the next 24 hours. But the term that you've used, what are the rules? I really like that. I haven't heard it said that way up until now. And it's just so clarifying for me. So, Joe, as you, and you've talked about some of them, as you work with your team in terms of defining the rules, what are the key categories, if that's the right way to say it, that you are working with your team to say, we need to define the rules in these areas? For example, you've talked about governmental, the rules that are going to come at us from local, national, state levels. You've talked about safety and cleanliness. What are the rules there? The rules relative to stress testing the business. Are there other key categories that you guys are focused on defining what are the rules around?
Well, I think one of the things that's happening now is, there's been a lot of conversation about the death of the B2B salesperson.
Yep.
Starting with the Forrester article, I believe it was
4 years ago. Yeah.
2016. And they had forecasted that 1 million B2B sales jobs would be gone by the year. In reality, they were gone at the beginning of 2019.
Yeah.
And what we had to come to grips with is, how do we become that omni-channel sales organization? There was a conversation that I had the pleasure of participating in a few weeks ago, and a question was posed, what will you do if 50% of your customers will not let you come into their facility?
Yep.
And, for the first initial reaction I had to that as well, is that really true? But as I thought about it, and I've thought about the concerns people have about the well-being and safety of their employees, and what's happening in the government sector is they want to shift the responsibility onto the employer if someone gets sick, which just opens up a Pandora's box of potential problems. So you're going to have be very rigorous in that. Well, the only way we're going to get a meeting is we have to be invited in.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole omni-channel transition is about. What are we doing to get invited into the customer? And I'll give you some examples. This week we received a call that, some engineers at Intel wanted to talk to us. They invited us to come to their facility. I went along with one of our sales managers. We got there, we got out, they logged in, they took our license plate number, they took all of our personal information, they tested us for temperature, we had to put on a mask, gloves. We were given shoe covers that we put in on right before we entered the building. They had a room. We maintained distancing, and they had a particular problem. We were able to give them a technical solution, and we left the building, walked out, and an hour later we had an order. But we had to be invited into the building. We could no longer say, hey, is Tommy available to see us today? We have to be invited in. And we've seen that same phenomena with our refinery customers, with our technology customers, with our infrastructure customers. You don't get in unless you're invited in. Now, how do you get invited in? Well, you have to be running campaigns. We have a monthly direct marketing initiative. We're developing mini campaigns. We're publishing white papers constantly. Our sales force has transitioned to making sales calls, and they have a goal every day of making 25 calls. And as we tell them, there's nothing, you don't have to necessarily make a sales pitch, but just tell people, hey, we're here. If you need help on anything, give us a call.
Yeah.
It's assurance. People are looking for some stability and assurance, and we have to provide that. The other thing we've started is I have one or two salespeople making digital pitches to me every day, and it does two things. It's helping people become comfortable with the tool, and I think you're seeing a rapid acceleration of adoption of all these digital communication tools.
Yep.
And I want to see how comfortable they are. I want to see if we can help them with their presentation formats. And I also gives me a chance to touch with them for 30 minutes. So they get to see that the boss is engaged and the boss is interested in them.
Yeah.
We're making a big investment in training. We started that about 5 years ago with the creation of Valen University. We know people don't have necessarily the skill sets, and you run away from things that you're afraid of. So yeah. Our educational initiatives are there. Let's get over the fear. But I see a readiness now of the organization to adopt all of these things because it's become a necessity, not something the boss wants you to do.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, relative to, you know, you're leaning on some of the technology trends, if you will, in addition to skills and the like. And I love the thinking. I showed it before you signed on, Joe, in terms that's coming out of the Boston Consulting Group and McKinsey and CIO Magazine. And there's a theme there. And all of them are saying, you know, this digital transformation was almost optional. But now with COVID-19, it's absolutely mandatory. Some of the think tanks that I've done with distributors over the last 2 years in digital transformation, they talked about as distributors, we have runway, that we don't have the urgency that other industries do because our, you know, and they had a lot of reasons for it. Our customers aren't ready for the digital transformation yet, so on and so forth. But I believe that runway has become a drag strip, that we, to your point, we don't have an option right now, and we do. This digital transformation is going to accelerate, even for those that were hoping for a runway. I suspect you agree with that, but I'd love your comments.
I think you have created a pretty good analogy, but I also want you to think about this. We are in the beginning phase, the first phase of transitioning from 4G technology to 5G technology.
Okay.
Now, people ask, what does that mean? Well, the Verizons and the AT&Ts and the other providers of wireless services are putting in the infrastructure to do that. Now, what does that mean to us as users? What it means is that one day you're going to be on 4G, which will be a 4-lane highway. And when you transition to 5G, you're on a 100-lane highway.
Wow.
The speed and the things that you're going to be able to do are just going to open up all kinds of new possibilities. And I think in 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years at the outside, we're going to look back to today. And although we're pretty impressed with technology today, we're going to say, boy, that was archaic. Because this will bring driverless vehicles. It'll allow you to manage robotic activities faster and better. You'll be able to apply artificial intelligence. So you do machine learning and you'll improve productivity. But this stuff is just going to speed up. It's going to speed up the ability to make decisions. And if you don't embrace it and you're still counting on yesterday's skills to carry you, I think you've got a dim future.
Yeah. Joe, as you peer into the future, let's just take AI, because I know you guys are experimenting and trying some things at Valen. You know, when you look into the next 2 years, let's say, when you look at the other side of this pandemic, how do you think the typical distributor should be thinking about AI and bringing it into their organization?
Well, I'd frame that in the context of distributors are becoming the managers of the customer experience.
Yep.
We're going to have to deliver a seamless digital experience between our suppliers and our customers. We have to move information at a much higher speed than we ever have before, because let's face it, in the retail sector, Amazon and others are defining the expectation.
Yep.
And if you're not meeting expectation, you're going to be seen as yesterday's news. You're old school.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're fondly thought of, but not often called.
Yeah.
So that's what I see happening. Now, how do you do that? You're going to have to use AI and I wouldn't call it artificial intelligence at this point. It's more automated intelligence, because you're using mathematic algorithms.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's going to move us, I believe, from being reactive into being more predictive. And if you're predictive, you can anticipate customers' needs and requirements, and you're going to give them the type of experience they desire. If you're reactive, they're going to say, why am I waiting for you to get to this?
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the big transitions, is this transition from being reactive to predictive, and AI is going to help do that. We have launched an initiative, and we will have proof of concept for review by the end of June, and we're moving forward. Now, the good news is that the team we're partnering with are very bright group of young mathematicians.
Yep.
And the young man who founded the company, his father owns a wholesale distribution business. So his father has been his alpha and beta test site. So my confidence level on the capability of this team has gone up immensely, because they're working in our environment. They're working in our world.
Sure. They know it.
But I think it's an imperative. If you don't do that, if we keep trying to do things with human input, we're going to fail, because the human input, the human way of doing it, it's like the old salesperson driving around with catalogs.
Yep.
That's the analog approach. We got to move to the digital approach, and we got to do it, and the expectations are going to be high.
Yeah. Joe, we're coming up on the clock, unfortunately, but so let me just, you know, when I brought you in, when I introduced you here, I talked about, you know, when I think of an executive who is just so talented at clearing the fog, connecting the dots, and making strategic decisions as a result of what you see happening and coming. Can you just share with us how Joe Neddemeyer peers into the future? What do you do? What do you read? Who do you talk to? Who do you listen to? Can you just give us some indication there?
I think you have to build an intelligence network, and I do it in multiple ways. We work with one forecasting firm who has put together our model for us, and they're pretty good. But we spot check them with three other economic forecasts.
Hmm.
So we're looking at that all the time. And if I see an aberration, I'm always picking up the phone and saying, why do you believe this?
Yep.
So it's spot checking. One of the other things I do is I have a service that tracks public companies, and I track some of our publicly traded suppliers, some of our publicly traded customers.
Yep.
And I also track companies that are leaders in industries that we serve. And all I'm watching is, are they upgrading the stock or are they downgrading the stock? And when I see an upgrade, I dig in and find out why. And when I see a downgrade, I look at why, because sometimes they're telling you that things are turning down before
yep.
the economists catch up.
Interesting.
The third thing I do, and a lot of this is the benefit of my time with the NAW's Institute for Distribution Excellence, is I have regular conversations with academia. I'm fortunate to serve on the advisory board to the Texas A&M School of Industrial Distribution. So I have access to all of their professors, and we have regular conversations about what's going on. I keep in constant contact with the fellows, people like Mike Marks and Mark Dancer. We have regular conversations. I have a network of industry CEOs that I'm speaking with, and I'm getting their input on what's happening in their industries and what are the unexpected things that are coming into them.
Yep.
And I gather those tidbits of information, and I gather notes, and here's a stack of my notes for the last 2 weeks. And
yep.
What I'll do on every Monday is I take those notes and I boil them down and I log what I consider the aha insights I've gotten in my journal.
Yep.
Because those become the it's the pieces of information that you put together that make the puzzle turn into a picture.
You bet. Joe, I appreciate that, man. I loved how you said that, an intelligence network. And I think you've helped everybody be able to create our own format for doing that, right? I mean, just from the notes I've taken here, forecasting firms, and you double check those. You track the publicly traded, both vendors and the industries that we're serving. The academia, the consultants in the industry CEOs, and then you put all those together. And I know there have been nights, Joe, that you've actually fallen asleep in your chair as you've been reading and keeping track of all this information and the discipline that you've put into the strategic foresight is something that I think is both inspirational and instructional for us all. Joe, as you know, we could go on for a lot longer. I appreciate these 30 minutes. Paul from Quebec says, I love this guy. He's why I came today. So, and that wasn't about me. That was about you, Joe Neddemeyer. And that's why a lot of people are here. So thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate your wisdom and your insight and your friendship, buddy.
Thanks for listening. Continue your shift to tomorrow by visiting us at unleashwd.com to access free resources, including additional podcasts, white papers, webinars, and our weekly newsletter, Unleash Your Week. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd also appreciate you reviewing our show with a 5-star review in the Apple Podcast app. Until next time, keep your eyes on the horizon, keep innovating, and shift to tomorrow.